Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. It's the 430th week of this Turning Towards Life conversation, and you're also welcome to be here. And it's also our first one, Lizzie, of the calendar year 2026. So to all of you and to all of us, may 2026 bring, in the midst of everything, gifts and nourishment and discovery and learning and flourishing of all kinds, is what I'm wishing for all of us. And in a moment, as usual, we're going to do this thing, Lizzie, you and I have been doing for all these years, which I think produces, is such a productive way to be in conversation with one another, which is you've brought a very rich, evocative and interesting source, some writing, which we're going to place in the middle of us. We're both going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it, but the way we're going to talk about it, and I know, Lizzie, you and I were talking just before we began about someone I met this week at a conference who'd been come across our work and had been listening to it, and I know what he said to me, so I just want to say it now. He said, in a world where everybody interrupts one another all the time, it's really remarkable to see what happens in a conversation where there's no interrupting, which is what we do here. So we will do that and see what unfolds. And just before we begin, for all of you who are with us, as we're beginning 2026, I want to just say that quite soon, in March, we're beginning the second season of our Turning Towards Life live endeavor, where you can come and join us once a month on Zoom and others, and we'll do this together. And we are coming towards the end of our first season, and it has been marvelous. And if you want to join us, come to turningtowards.life and you can find out all the details there and get our emails in your inbox and support us. And we're also beginning a new year of endeavors at Third Space. We are thirdspace.org. Our professional coaching course is coming up in the summer. Our Foundations of Coaching program is coming up in February and then again later in the year. We'd love to meet you and have you with us. So lots of places if you want to come into... What do I want to say? If you want to be in community and learn with us in a way that's different from having us come into your ears in a podcast or into your eyes and ears on YouTube, there are some great ways to do it, and be wonderful to meet you there.
Thank you, Justin, for all of that. So we have a source today, and it comes from the book Care of the Soul by Thomas More. And this comes in the context of, I guess, some wonderings and some reflections I'm in my life. And somebody sent this, a friend of ours sent this to me saying, oh, might this be good for Turning Towards Life? And it felt like, yes, of course. So it's a paragraph from this book, and it goes like this. We all tend to divide experience into two parts, usually the good and the bad. But there may be all kinds of suspicious things going on in this splitting. We may simply have never considered the value in certain things that we reject. Or by branding certain experiences negative, we may be protecting ourselves from some unknown fears. We are all filled with biases and ideas that have snuck into us without our knowing. Much soul can be lost in such splitting. So that care of the soul can go a long way simply by recovering some of this material that has been cut off.
Thank you, Lizzie. So as you said, this is from Care of the Soul, which is it in its entirety a remarkable book. We all tend to divide experience into two parts, usually the good and the bad. But there may be all kinds of suspicious things going on in this splitting. We may simply have never considered the value in certain things we reject. Or by branding certain experiences negative, we may be protecting ourselves from some unknown fears. We're all filled with biases and ideas that have snuck into us without our knowing it. Much soul can be lost in such splitting. So, that care of the soul can go a long way simply by recovering some of this material that's been cut off.
Thank you, Justin. In your reading, I was kind of seeing in like really quick succession all the times I make things good and bad, all the times I reject things, all the times I'm protecting myself, all the times I'm afraid, all my biases. It was, yeah, I was just seeing, oh yes, yes, I can see all that in myself. And the way that Thomas More invites us into seeing that the reclamation of what I have rejected or what I have split off or what I have judged as something bad, when who knows whether it's bad in some way, in the reclamation of that, somehow we're tending to our souls. And of course, we're not separate from other people too. So whatever I'm cutting off in myself is very hard to welcome in another. And yet, maybe that in someone's trajectory of their life is a deeply important thing to be welcomed for, rather than also have them cut it off. So I'm really curious about tending to the soul in this way, like seeing it, like having it, like the context of tending to our parts that have been rejected or split off, tending to them in the context of kind of enriching, repairing, tending to the soul of what it means to be a human being. And what is that? You know, if I say soul, and again, like whenever we're here, I think, well, I don't even know what that means anymore. But this is a chance to wonder, you know, what is that word? What does soul mean? And of course, Thomas More is just talking about soul this whole book, and how beautiful to try and find language to see what that might mean. What I do know is all the times I do this, as in recovering pieces that I may have left behind or got judged when I was little, or I've just haven't been exposed to, so I don't know what it is and I feel afraid of it or something. Whenever I do the reclamation work and the kind of joining with something that's different to me, or that's seems far from me, or that I've judged, that brings me more connection and brings me home either to myself or to someone else, it totally resonates with me that tends to my soul. There's a kind of joy that comes from that connection, from that learning. You know, I think we are just built for learning. We're built for expansion. We're built for widening our hearts. And for that all to be in the context of soul feels very truthful to me. And having this invitation, this really simple invitation actually, to question ourselves in terms of our unknown fears or what our biases are or the way that we label things good and bad, and to have that as a piece of self-reflection where we can say, oh yeah, I can see that, and now what? And then we have the context of soul to refer to. It feels very important and beautiful for all of us as humans to be in that wondering.
There's so much to respond to here, Lizzie. And I thought when you said widening of our hearts, that might be a way of thinking about what soul is. There's something about our width and our depth and our imaginative, sensing, contactful, meaning-filled capacities as humans that resonates me within that word. And I was thinking, whilst you were talking, I was thinking about anger, which is a thing for me. And there's a line just before the part that we read on this page of the book, which says, invites us, what he says is to look with special attention and openness at what's been rejected, and then to speak favorably for that rejected element.
Mm.
So I was suddenly remembering, it's only January, it's really cold outside, it's midwinter, the ice is on the ground. And I think I was remembering a moment, a time that must have been this time of year, when my children, who are now in their like early 20s, were in their before 10, or maybe their very, very early time around 10. And they were going off on a summer camp. And we had a car that could fit lots of children in. And I drove around the corner to pick up, I put them in the car and I picked up some other children from a nearby house. And then off we drove. And this car was full of me and people. And it was rambunctious and chaotic, but it was also very hard to manage. There were, you know, like basic things, putting seatbelts on and can we actually go and everything. And we got them there. And when I came back, one of the parents said to me, oh, they said, you're so calm in the midst of those situations. Like, you never get angry. And I remember it was the first point in my life thinking, I don't know if I like that, what I've just heard. I think up until then, I would have gone, oh, yes, I never get angry. What a good thing. How fantastic. Look at me. Anger bad, calmness good. And I thought about it afterwards and I thought, actually, my splitting off of anger, my having calmness good, anger bad, had served me very well in many situations, but had served me very badly in other situations. Like if I really needed to have something happen, or I needed to express that a boundary had been crossed, or I needed to assert something, I'd shrink away from it. So that meant that my stand on things in the world very rarely got a place, and I would come to harm sometimes, but I would also cause others harm by not, you know, I would be the person who'd say, I can't bring up that child in the back hasn't got their seatbelt on. Actually, that's not too far because I would seatbelts. But I would also be afraid, like you said, Lizzie, because I was splitting anger off in me, I would also be very afraid of other people's anger, which meant I would be so much less inclined to have real, genuine conversations with people I loved for fear that I might say something that they would be angry about, or that I might find some way that they disapproved of me that might lead to anger. And I would keep my distance from people who were angry. Like, it was so much distancing that had to happen. And it was such a revelation. I think at that moment, the seeds began to get born when someone said, you're so calm all the time. was to start to feel that there was something in me that had become so unwelcome. And I was so sure that it was bad. And began to see how much that cost. And I love this line, again, from the bit before, that what we're called to is to start to speak favorably for or turn towards that rejected element and be curious about it. Because what I can see around anger is that this is the thing that Thomas More says in the part that we both read, much soul can be lost in such splitting. Mm. Like the cost of being afraid of this part of me that's a part of everyone, to the extent that I would do anything to avoid it and anything to deny to anyone else that I had such a part and anything to get out of the way of that part in someone else. If nothing else, and there's many, many things to say about it, if nothing else, the cost of living a very, very constrained, fearful, wary life, wary of myself and wary of everyone else all the time and trying to keep up this image that would keep that part away, I can feel it now. It's like a sickening kind of feeling. It leaves so much out.
Mm.
And I have then been, as I've got more acquainted with anger over the last 20 years, I have sometimes been very unskillful with my anger. Sometimes anger has come out and I've barely known what to do with it. And I have brought it in ways that afterwards I went, oh my goodness, I wish I hadn't said that or done that. But I do also know that my body feels so much more alive if I'm able to turn towards it and welcome it, and I can become so much more care-filled in bringing it. But also, I'm just less afraid of other people. I'm so much less afraid of other people as I've got less afraid of this part in myself. And in a world where we seem to be so afraid of everyone, all that, I think that being afraid of one another is the hallmark of our time, and has us withdraw from one another into the, what's the word, the consolations of social media and being online and not, you know, not really talking to one another or cutting one another off. I actually can't think of many more important things for us to do than what Thomas More is asking. This isn't like, so we feel better, although we might feel better. The extent to which we can meet one another is directly correlated with the extent to which we can meet what's in ourselves. Yeah. And not deny it.
Gosh, so much arising as you're talking, Justin, for me. I was just feeling into the kind of what it means to welcome something like anger, which obviously has a destructive element to it. I kind of in some way want to acknowledge why it's frightening. You know, I feel compassion for you in being afraid of it. And it's big. And if we didn't have parents and education systems and whoever else around us when we were forming our ideas of what it was to be human, who could say, okay, this is okay. You can be angry and we can feel this together and it has life force in it and it tells me what matters and just let's see if we can be here without you harming anyone and without you harming yourself and, you know, all of that. If we didn't have that, it is really scary. Because if the people who are more powerful than us kind of move away and go, oh, I'm scared of that too. We don't want to hurt people when we're little. We want to care about people. We have all our good intentions fully on display. And so if everyone around me was scared of anger, of course I'm going to become scared of anger. And I'm feeling the compassion for that and how big and scary it can be. And especially when those who are in positions of power get angry irresponsibly, how frightening that can be. And we somewhat sometimes maybe say, well, I'm never going to be like that because that's really scary. So I'm just feeling a lot of warmth for that. The reasoning for putting that material aside, like putting anger aside and saying that's bad, it's like a totally understandable thing. And then as you were talking as well, I'm feeling the work that it takes to really reclaim this part in its health and its meaning and that it's welcomed back and it has gifts of all kinds. But it takes the kind of curiosity that you were saying that you had with this person who said to you, oh, you never get angry when all the children are in the car and nobody's putting their seatbelt on or whatever. And the way that you took that reflection was to be curious about it. And in a way, that's what everyone's doing for us all the time on some level, is giving us avenues of curiosity that we can go, oh, hold on. Someone's just said, some just had a reaction, or somebody says something to me about me or whatever. What is there? Is there a soul opportunity here for me to reclaim something? Whether it's a compliment and you feel uneasy about it, or whether it's something that hurts, what is the avenue of, as you were saying, Justin, speaking favorably for that which feels rejected, or that which feels uneasy, or that which feels not okay, doesn't sit well with me? Like, how do we, instead of bouncing off of that in some kind of reactivity or another shutting off happening, how do we stay curious and together with it so that we can wonder what kind of soul tending might be being afforded to be here by a comment or a happening or something? And maybe sometimes it's just not the right time, or there isn't anything, maybe. But I think so many times there is a possibility of curiosity that we can bring that is very likely to end up in some kind of soul tending. You know, like when you tell me some kind of way that I'm being and it has an impact where you feel less able to speak, or you feel less able to be yourself or something. And I get to say, okay, I'm going to see. I'm going to see what that is in me. I'm going to take it to the curiosity place in me, and I'm going to wonder. And I'm going to speak favorably on behalf of what you're bringing to me, and see what light it has in it that I might be able to find that enables me to respond in a different way, or that enables me to be more truthful or more kind, or whatever's called for, more able to relate to you, more able to welcome whatever it is that you're saying. And of course, that involves me looking at all my defense mechanisms and all my fearfulness and all my worries. And so I feel like this kind of gift that this person brought you, which in a way was a compliment, but because of whatever inquiry you were in at the time, you thought, oh, hold on, I'm going to think about that. Like, is that a good thing to be the person who never gets angry? Or is that something that makes me into a kind of person that doesn't allow for this or for that? Or so I'm really, well, first of all, just appreciating the kind of reflective being that you are, and that that's the way that you took that, that it was content for your curiosity, and that that's a possibility that we can all take to heart in our lives, and that we can kind of bring it home into these widening hearts of ours and wonder. And also it makes me think about the crazy intricate interactions that we all have, and that who knows what the purpose of anything is, but we could give it the purpose of soul enrichment. We could give everything the purpose of, if I take this in, what does it bring me? What can I see? How am I learning? And every time we're learning and we're expanding, I feel like our souls are met, like, or we're engaging on a soul level somehow.
I was thinking quite a lot whilst you were talking, Lizzie, about the connection between this word soul and wholeness, and how I think it's a conversation you and I have had here before, that in both Arabic and Hebrew, the word salam and shalom, which mean peace, actually mean wholeness. That's the root of the word, is to do with wholeness, not to do with peacefulness. And how the peace that comes when we can include, but like you said earlier, not some kind of naive inclusion. You were talking about having, we need to have a mature adults around us as we grow, and we learn to come into contact with our own anger, because anger can be an incredibly destructive force. It can turn into wanton rage, and we can go around destroying everything, when really the sort of grown up, mature, deeper impulse behind anger is, tells us what we care about, and it tells us when things that we value have been transgressed in some way, and it gives us the chance to respond. So the wholeness, the soul here can't just be a sort of let's just have everything happen and not take care. There's a caretaking something in us that's so called for. I was really touched by what you said about recognizing that there are legitimate fears that we have about encountering the parts of us, the aspects of us that we've split off. And I thought that the language of having other parts of us that are defensive or protective is so helpful here, to see ourselves. I think it's a little bit too simple to see ourselves as, well, there's me, and there's all the stuff I've split off and all the stuff I've included, and I just got to get better at welcoming the stuff that I've split off, is to recognize that that brings up questions of our own security and safety, our identity, where I belong. If I include this, will I belong? Who will I be? And there are parts of us equally that have cares and concerns about that, that we're, as you and I have talked about so many times, that we're a really complex and rich community of all of these different aspects of us in relationship with one another. And so I think that there's a kind of unkind way of dealing with this, which, you know, you say to me or I say to you, you just have to bring that part in, and like, it's really tender.
Mm.
And if I talk about myself and anger, I think until that point where I first encountered somebody saying how calm I was, when it first occurred to me that that might not be how I wanted to be all the time, it was like sort of new curiosity. I think until that point, if anyone had said to me, "You're angry," I would have denied it very strongly. And I would have hidden my anger, but been angry anyway, in a way that lots of other people could feel, which is a really unhelpful way of having anger. And I would have wanted to deny and defend against what I would have seen as an accusation that I was angry, because I held anger to be such a bad thing.
Yeah.
And there's tenderness in there. We can't just go smashing through our own protective structures, our own, that of us that's protective. So there's a kind of gentleness that's called for here as well. And you were talking about welcome. So I think it's a really important question about how we gentle ourselves enough, which is what I think our souls are for. I think there's a that we can... Suddenly I'm thinking about gardens growing, Lizzie, about what it is to grow something, the sort of care and patience it takes if we're going to embark on this work. And like you said, which are so resonant in me, none of us know how any of this will work out. In fact, none of us really know what part our lives play in the grand scheme of things. So the good reason to do this is for the sake of widening and deepening ourselves, not because we know it's going to make our lives groovy or something. Because who knows where it will take us, as I've got more in contact with that in me that can be angry, which is really that in me which can feel when a value has been transgressed or broken, something that I care about, it's brought release and complication. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it works out in my life, but what I do think is that the work of including in myself makes it possible for more of myself to be in the world, which makes it possible for whatever contribution I'm here to make to get made. And then I really have no idea where that goes. I get tiny little glimpses, but they're only from my own perspective and they're only from now.
Yeah. You know, Justin, the word realness is coming up in me as you're talking. And I'm realizing how much I value realness. Like how much I value turning up here with you and being myself. And how I think this soul, this work of the soul or the work of wholeness and inclusion for me actually enables me bit by bit to cultivate real relationships, real like choices filled with my realness included in them. And it really enables me to feel like I'm myself in the world, not a kind of contrived version or a pretend version or something. And of course, that doesn't make my life happy all the time or something, but it definitely makes it real. It definitely feels like it's my own and not some other person's life I'm living or living up to someone else's expectations or something. And I think this is in some way why the source came about as well, because I was feeling I had a conversation with another mum the other day who's also got young children, and she was saying over the holiday time there had been interactions with, you know, different cousins and family members, and there was this one little girl who always came to her when she was having feelings. It was a kind of a extended family member, because her parents really wouldn't allow her to have the feelings that she was having because it was too much for them in their system. So she always needed to be happy and okay. Like there was a demand for her to be happy and okay. And how this person had become a kind of a sanctuary for her where she could cry and tell her how she really felt about things and whatever. And I think this is what I feel like I'm in some way in recovery from, is it's a demand on myself to constantly be okay and see that projected out onto everyone around me. And when I am in this conversation with you, Justin, and when I'm thinking about this word realness and being myself includes so much more than being okay and being happy and being presentable and being socially adjusted or something. And that to me has inherent value as a being in the world. And it feels like that trumps happiness or being fine or something. And I feel like, to me, that's the value of all of this work, is to feel like I can be real and be myself. And for you to feel like, oh, maybe me getting in touch with my anger actually brings me forth in a better, more fulsome way, where I'm being honest and I'm not hiding things from people. And I'm actually saying, well, actually, that this is how this makes me feel. So that you're including yourself fully in your life and seeing that you can be included rather than having to hide pieces away. So I'm feeling very, like through our language and our conversation and the field of this, Justin, feeling very warmed by this sense of realness that we have here and really committed to it. And as you say, it doesn't make everything rosy, it doesn't make everything groovy, it doesn't make everything okay. but it does mean that we're here with one another really genuinely. And that feels like it really matters to me. So I want to just say thank you to everybody who's been in conversation with me over this Christmas about the realness of what it's like to be with our families and to be in dangle time where lots of things arise. And this in some ways a response to all of that, just choosing this source. And thanks to Bobby for sending this to me. He's a very wonderful friend of ours. And thank you to you, Justin, for being a soul tender. Thank you to Thomas Moore for writing down the unwritable downableness of all of this. It's an amazing, amazing book. And thank you to all of you for being in your own way on this path to realness and wholeness. And we'll see you next week for another Source Chosen by Justin.
Indeed we will. Thank you, Lizzie. Bye, everyone.